Chapter 15. For 2 more days, Ramon and Manek trekked through the forest, the man leading the way and the alien at his heels. They paused for Ramon to eat and drink and to piss and shit, but rested only at night. The other Ramon had made perfunctory camps, sleeping in the hollow of a lightning-struck milk pine one night and in a poorly constructed lean-to the next. The fire pit and well-built shelter of the earlier campsites were gone, and Ramon understood why. His twin was truly on the run. They were down to the final sprint. They found 3 more flat firs along the path, and Ramon was fairly sure they had overlooked several others. The path they traveled would reek of blood to the creatures of Sao Paulo, and more often Ramon saw signs of chupacabra. Evil-smelling spoor on the path, trees gouged by sharpened claws, and once a distant call that was equal parts solitude and murder. Manek remained distant and reserved, but more comprehensible than it had been at first. With every night's rest, the alien seemed to gain strength and focus. None of the strange dreams had troubled Ramon again, and the issues of Tata Kroida and killing, Enya and genocide, had come up in their conversation no more often than before. Memories still flooded Ramon from time to time, moments from his childhood, trivial events from his time in the Enya ship, and arriving on Sao Paulo. He found that he was better able to ignore them if he intentionally kept his mind on the path before him. It was the middle morning of the 3rd day when the game path they had been following reached the river, the great Rio Embudo. The river was almost too wide to see across. What had been a thin ribbon seen from afar had stretched into a clear expanse of glacier-cold water, fast and smooth. Trees pressed up to the banks, exposed roots trailing into the flow like thick fingers. No human footprints marred the muddy bank, but Ramon didn't doubt that the other one had been at this place, seeing this same landscape. But how long before? And where would he have gone from here to construct his escape raft? Ramon considered the sunlight glittering on the water's surface and let his mind turn the problem over. If he had been here, and free, fleeing the alien and dodging the chupacabra, what would he have done? Scratching his wispy beard, he turned south and began plodding along the riverbank. Manek followed without a word, the sahel bobbing between them like a length of rope. The water murmured softly. On another day, with some other errand, Ramon would have stopped, perhaps dipped his bare feet into the river water, and enjoyed the beauty of the place. As it was, his mind buzzed with 100 different questions. Had his twin already finished some small raft and floated away to the south? And what would Manek do if they found the other Ramon? And how large was a chupacabra's territory, anyway? He spoke about none of it, only judging where best to place his feet, and what angle to take around the trees in order to keep the sahel from catching on a branch and tugging at his throat. There were fewer signs of his twin now. No footprints, few small branches broken at the correct height for a man to have done the damage. It wasn't that the other Ramon had become more careful, but the river drew forest animals to its bank to obscure any more human traces. There would be more kiki here, more salt rats and alces negros. The mud banks they passed showed the marks of thin hooves, wide-slung soft toes, the tiny bird-like cuneiform of tapanos and stone kites. The river at their side was teeming with life. The planet was alive around them. They were 2 aliens marching through a world they didn't belong to. 3 aliens, if he counted the other Ramon. The river bent lazily to the east, offering Ramon a majestic view of the water and the distant forest on the far bank, but restricting what he could see of the path up ahead. He paused, squatted beside a fallen ice root, and spat. Manek came looming up beside him and stopped. "The man is not here," Manek said, its voice likely carried across the water like a distant landslide. "He's here, somewhere. "'He may have gone against the flow of the river,' Manek said. "'If we are searching in the wrong direction, then we will be unable to find him.' "'Then he'll be floating on by, won't he? "'That's why I'm holding close to the bank, so we can see him if he passes.' "'The alien was silent. "'You hadn't thought of that,' Ramon said.
"'I am not an apt tool for this purpose,' Manek said.
"'The quills on his head shifted in something akin to despair.
"'You're doing fine,' Ramon said. "'But if we don't find this pendejo before sundown, we're going to have a problem. "'He'll have the chance to—'
"'The sound was like something falling, the rattle of leaves, the faintest hush of moving air. "'The beast burst from the trees in near silence.' It wasn't until Manek turned toward it that the chupacabra bared its teeth and shrieked. Ramon had seen pictures of chupacabras before, even once held the scaled pelt of what must have been a young member of the species. Nothing he had seen had prepared him for the reality of the creature that faced him now. As tall as a man, and perhaps 12 feet long, its limbs were engines of power and speed. Black claws tipped its almost hand-like paws, and the wide mouth, lips drawn back to reveal the deep red gums, seemed too small for the doubled rows of teeth. Its eyes were not the red glow of the parade float, but pure black. The predator stink of it. Rotten meat, animal musk, and old blood rushed on ahead of it like a wave. Manek's arm shifted, and energy exploded on the chupacabra's breast. The screaming cry rose to a higher register, and the air suddenly filled with the stink of burning hair and flesh. But the shot wasn't enough to stop the beast, and its attack didn't falter. The chupacabra crashed into the alien, and for the first time, Manek seemed small. Ramon backed instinctively into the water, until the Sahel tugged at his neck, unable to take his eyes from the whirling tangle that was alien clashing with alien. His mind was empty with fear, his own high voice squeaking out the Paternoster without realizing it. Through the Sahel, he could feel Manek's body grappling with the chupacabra, exerting every last bit of strength it possessed. It was not as hopelessly uneven a struggle as it would have been had Manek been human. The chupacabra was stronger and heavier, but not so much so that Manek was completely without a chance. Both Manek and Ramon screamed in agony when the thing raked its claws down Manek's side. But then Manek's long arms found some purchase. The chupacabra's battle calls shifted, becoming at first alarmed and then agonized as Manek hugged it close, its cable-like arms squeezing the air from the predator's lungs. Ramon could hear the chupacabra's ribs crack, hear it gasp in pain, and for a moment he felt a surge of amazed hope that they would win. But then the chupacabra writhed and twisted, its legs flailing. A claw pierced Manek's wounded eye, and unbearable pain radiated down the Sahel into Ramon's flesh. He and the alien cried out as one. The chupacabra bounded back and landed on all fours, already bunched to spring again. Ramon felt Manek's distress echoing his own. The chupacabra leaped, and Manek fired another blast of energy. The bolt went wide, and the impact of the chupacabra's hurtling body knocked Manek back. Now it was the chupacabra with its arms locked around Manek, its thick hind legs digging at the alien's legs and belly with long, saber-sharp claws. Ramon screamed in agony, pulling at the flesh of the Sahel as if he could rip the leash free. And to his astonishment, Ramon felt movement in his throat, a loosening, like tendrils of metal withdrawing from his bones and nerves. His experience of Manek's pain lessened. His doubled consciousness faded. With a disturbing, slithering sound, the Sahel pulled away from him and turned, snake-like, to whip at the chupacabra. The flickering exposed wires at the Sahel's end arced with energy as it struck at the chupacabra, and the beast screamed in pain. But Manek seemed to be weakening, and nothing that had happened so far had significantly slowed the chupacabra's relentless attack. Ramon, standing thigh-deep in the icy river water, bent to find some stones to throw at the beast, then came to his senses. He was free, and once the chupacabra had killed Manek, he would be next. This was no time to fight. This was the time to flee. He took a great breath and dove, kicking as hard as he ever had, moving with the current. The sounds of battle vanished as his ears filled with water. Beneath the river's glittering surface, bright green fish swam, unconcerned with the violence on the shore. Fine golden filaments rose from the muck at the bottom and were bent by the water as they pointed the way to the sea. Ramon was careful to swim well above the golden threads. They could sting as bad as jellyfish. When he came up for air, he had already covered at least 100 meters, and the howls of the chupacabra were fading behind him. He took a fresh lungful and dove again. His first impulse was to set out for the opposite bank, but seconds after he'd had that thought, he abandoned it. The water was hardly warmer than the ice that had spawned it, and adrenaline would do little to stave off hypothermia. Crossing the river would be suicide. Ramon angled back for the near shore, and realized as his arms flailed and clawed at the current that he was in trouble. The fast river flow had pulled him around the bend, but it had also taken him farther from the bank than his own efforts could have. He rose again, treading water and borne along like a cork. He could hear no sound of the struggle. Either the fight had ended, or he was far enough away that the sound of it was drowned out by his splashing. He turned his head, blinking hard to clear his eyes, and found the shore. His heart sank. "Come on, Ramon," he told himself. "You're a tough pendejo. You can do this thing." He turned himself toward the riverbank and started swimming as hard as he could, perpendicular to the flow. The river plants and streamers of moss below him were his guides as he pushed himself toward the uncertain safety of land. His feet and hands stung and soon went numb. His earlobes ached. His face and chest grew thick-fleshed and rubbery, but he pushed on. He couldn't die out here. He had to reach the shore. It was his goddamn Tata Kreuda. He focused on moving his body, legs kicking, arms and hands scooping at the water. Time lost its meaning. He might have been swimming for 3 minutes, or an hour, or his whole life. The chill was deadly, and he could feel it knifing into him. He faltered once, seduced into thinking he needed a moment's rest. He was dead. The only reason to keep trying was stubbornness. And Ramon Espejo was a very stubborn man. Even when he was hardly doing more than floating, he pushed his mouth free of the water and gulped one more breath, and then one more, and then one more. His mind began to fade, and he recalled his dream of being one with the river, of becoming the flow itself. Perhaps that would not be so bad after all. Just one more breath so he could think about it. Then one more. It was a sandbar that saved him. The river widened, its eastern half becoming shallow as it broadened. Driftwood rose from the sand like the antlers of some nightmare beast. Ramon found an ancient log standing at an angle from the water. He crawled up its black, slimy side and held it like it was a lover. He was too cold to shiver. That wasn't good. He had to get out of the water. The river still lapped at his knees, and his feet were numb. Ramon bit down at his lip until he tasted blood, the pain focusing his mind. He had to reach the shore, then get dry, and then hope that the sun would warm his flesh. There was enough debris on the sandbar that he could move from one support to another. It seemed as if anything that went into the water upstream ended up caught here. The danger was that he might slip, fall into the water, and lack the will to rise again. He had to be careful. With a deep breath, Ramon pushed his blackwood lover away and stumbled to a small dam of branches that had been laced together with ivy and strips of bark. Then from that to a low stone, then another slime-slick log, and then the water was no higher than his ankles. Ramon trudged slowly to dry land. He collapsed on the ground, laughed weakly, and vomited up what seemed like several liters of river water. His alien garments were sodden and heavy. The shoes kicked off somewhere in the river. Fingers clumsy as sausages, he pulled the clothing from his skin and lay back naked, trying with the last of his conscious will to angle himself toward the sun. It wasn't sleep that took him, but neither was it death, because sometime later his mind reformed and he struggled to sit up. The sun had moved the width of three hands together, lowering toward the western sky. His teeth were chattering like a badly tuned lift tube. His hands and feet were blue, but not black. The alien robe he had cast aside was dry and sun-warmed. He pulled it on awkwardly and sat, arms around his knees, laughing and weeping. His neck, where the Sahel had entered him, felt unnaturally hot. The skin there was smooth as river stone and numb as a witch's mark. Ramon rubbed his fingertips over the insertion point and let the reality of his situation sink into him. He had made it. He was free. He looked out over the water with a sense of glee and disbelief. He'd done it. It didn't occur to him that the mesh of branches tied together on the sandbar was odd until he heard the sharp intake of breath behind him and turned to see a surreal and familiar sight. The other Ramon stood at the tree line. His chest was bare, his pants ripped into rough shorts. Dark hair rose crazily from his head. His right hand was wrapped in a bandage black with dried blood, and his left gripped the old field knife. Ramon's field pack slung over one sunburned shoulder. Of course. He'd made a raft. The branches out there hadn't wrapped themselves with bark. And now the flow of the river and the cruel irony of the gods had brought both Ramons to the same place at the same time, caught up on the same sandbar. He rose slowly, unsteadily, trying not to startle his twin. He raised a hand in greeting, fear closing his throat. His twin took a step back, eyeing him balefully. "Who the fuck are you?" the man said.